with that majestic music, we come back in for hour two of the Harry Brown Show. And as you can tell, if you listen to the show regularly, I am not Harry Brown. I am Jim Babka, the president of the Downsize DC Foundation and DownsizeDC.org. And I'm also a host of a radio show here on the Genesis Communications Network, the Culture Repair Show, heard at 4 p.m. Central on Sundays. I will be on tomorrow live once again. I'm privileged on this holiday weekend to be able to sit in the prestigious Harry Brown chair and share another hour with you and my very special guest, Lou Rockwell of LouRockwell.com fame, the very popular website that has 400,000-plus unique visitors every month, giving libertarian commentary. It's probably the biggest deal in the libertarian movement in terms of educating people about what's going on out there. It's a site I read regularly and recommend to other people. I've hooked several people on it, and it's now their daily reading drug of choice, so to speak. He's also the author of the book Speaking of Liberty, and he is the director of the Mises Institute. And you can find information about Mises, a wealth of information, at Mises.org. So I hope that you'll do that. Lou, we've got a question to start off this hour. It comes from Bob. This is an email question. So this is the night of the Bobs, apparently. I was wondering if Lou was willing to share any civil disobedience, he puts that in quotes, civil disobedience, related items that those of us that are anti-war might pursue. Can we do more than hit the forward button in our email program? What do you say to that, Lou?
Well, you know, this has to be a personal decision. Very tough to advocate somebody else doing something like this. I agree with St. Thomas Aquinas that an unjust law is no law at all. And so, of course, we have the right to disobey an unjust law. And I think we can all agree that virtually every edict that comes out of Washington is unjust.
Amen.
That's because the only real law is the natural law. And legislative fiats that violate the natural law or not in accord with the natural law are no law at all. That would include things like murdering people in Iraq. So there are all kinds of things people do. They demonstrate where the government doesn't want you to demonstrate. Sometimes they withhold their taxes. All those kinds of things. There's the War Resisters League it's a left-wing organization, but it's always out. Its members, they don't pay, they try not to pay the taxes for the warfare state. Unfortunately, they believe in the welfare state. As libertarians, we know neither one of them is a good thing. I don't feel like I can, advocate anybody doing something that potentially puts you in jail. It's a very tough thing. And my guess is, in my own case, I don't think we've come to the point where civil disobedience is needed yet. Maybe we'll come to that, and maybe that'll be the way that really the whole thing ends. I remember that. What really probably had the most to do with ending the Vietnam War was not only the draft resistance that took place here at home, but then they abolished the draft in order to be able to carry the war on. It was the resistance within the military by soldiers engaging in what the government calls mutiny, what I call just, not wanting just to take a day off, or a desertion, as the government calls it, trying to change your job, as I would think of it. So you had a whole lot of resistance of civil disobedience within the military, and that scares them. So maybe we're going to have some of that take place in Iraq. I hear it about some of these National Guard guys are being held over there against their will. We'll just have to wait and see.
But you had a chance, Lou,
for me to advocate that for somebody else.
Lou, you had a chance recently to address an anti-war crowd. It was a left-wing anti-war crowd. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, it was a United for Peace and Justice rally in Birmingham, Alabama, on the day of the big rally in Washington, and it's a mixed bag, like the one in Washington. I might add, the conservative movement's a mixed bag too.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very good on the war, and they're very good on civil liberties. They're very good on government spying on us and those kinds of questions. On the other hand, they want to have the government take all our money to erect a welfare state and, in some cases, a socialist state. Some of them go along with Noam Chomsky, who calls himself a libertarian socialist. Of course, that's a contradiction in terms.
Yeah.
But I always think if people agree with us on something, I think you should try to work with them if it's an important topic.
Was your speech well received?
It was very well received. And there were a group of young libertarians there from Auburn University who went up with me and had all kinds of great signs like, make money, not war. And they got a lot, you know, got into a lot of discussions. And one of the kids had a pro-capitalist sign and was attacked, I mean, verbally attacked by a left-wing guy. And the libertarian student said, well, what does capitalism mean to you? And he said, well, it's the government, you know, going all over the world and forcing other countries to have special deals with the big American corporations. And the guy said, well, that's not capitalism. That's, you know, that's some kind of fascism or interventionism or whatever. And it's not what we believe in. We believe in a free market. And I don't know. I think these sorts of dialogues are wonderful. And I think, again, the war is and the warfare state and all the things that go along with it, the excuses for shutting us up, for putting people in camps, for more secret police, for spying on us, reading our emails, knocking on the door in the middle of the night and sending you to Guantanamo, and all the things they claim the right to do to us. This is the most important issue. And so if we can get people, even if they don't agree with us on other things, to cooperate in a common cause against the warfare state, I think it's great.
Now, you also had a fantastic column here recently called The State and the Flood. On my radio show, I shared a great deal of the column, and I really extolled the virtue of it over a couple of different weeks after what happened down in New Orleans. What happened exactly in New Orleans? Whose fault was it? Was it the hurricane? What was it?
Well, of course, we have terrible natural events that take place. But to me, it was no coincidence that these were government flood walls that broke, and the government had planned the whole place and set up its alleged anti-flood strategy at vast expense. Done all kinds of things through the Corps of Engineers, an entirely illegitimate organization operating here domestically, anyway, to destroy the natural marshes and do all kinds of things that made flood much more damaging. So people can look up that column on the website. But basically, I think not only in its alleged planning against the flood did the government make everything worse, but then especially after the flood, of course, as I think we all saw, quite a wonderful development. I saw even reporters, normally so sycophantic to every government official, giving government officials a tough time. It was a great, great thing to see. We really saw the total incompetence and evil of the federal government and why it only makes trouble and can only transfer wealth. Every single thing they do, they're taking money from some people and giving it to others, and mainly to themselves, of course, but also to plenty of people who are the contractors. And not to the benefit of the American people, certainly not to the benefit of our freedom or our prosperity, just the opposite.
You know, I think it's great that you saw those reporters, because the night of that Bush gave that speech, you know, Timmy Russert was jumping up and down like a schoolboy, all excited. It's going to be like FDR and the New Deal all over again. We're going to have the first city of the 21st century. I mean, it seemed like the whole media that night that I saw was you know, embracing this New Deal idea. They liked this idea of a new deal.
Sure, it's true. And we think of, you know, I mean, the conservatives talk about liberal bias and liberals talk about conservative bias in the media. Neither one of those is the problem. The problem is state bias. The media is joined at the hip with the central state, and they promote the central state, and they promote all its various evil activities. And so the media are, by and large, a very big problem for any of us concerned with freedom.
One,
the internet's so great.
1-800-259-9231. This is probably going to be your last chance to get a question in for Lou Rockwell. 1-800-259-9231.
If you produce computer storage media, you need GlideRite test heads. GlideRite is a major supplier of test heads to most media manufacturers in the U.S. and Asia. In addition, GlideRite produces glide heads, burnish heads, certifier heads, and thermal asperity heads, focusing on meeting your specific needs with short turnaround times and optimum quality, all at a competitive price. GlideRite's delivery performance is unmatched, whether quantities are large or small. GlideRite has manufacturing facilities in Milpitas, California, and Ho Chi Minh, Vietnam. Each site is equipped with state-of-the-art tooling and computerized equipment. GlideRite's services include research and development, new design and technology, and engineering support. Whether you need standard heads or customized solutions, GlideRite is your expert source. So when designing hard disks, always specify GlideRite.
You're listening to The Harry Brown Show on the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
It's 20 minutes past the hour. This is The Harry Brown Show, and I'm your guest host, Jim Babka. Joining me tonight is Lou Rockwell of LouRockwell.com, a very highly read website. Lou, you and Harry Brown go back a ways, as I understand it. You guys knew each other a long time ago. How did you meet Harry Brown?
Well, I was very lucky to meet Harry Brown in the late 1960s when I was working at a publisher called Arlington House, which was the only publishing house at that time that would normally publish libertarian or conservative books. And I remember getting the manuscript of his book, How You Can Profit from the Coming Devaluation. And I was an editor there, and I started to read it, and I thought, holy smokes, what a great book. And it went on to become Arlington House's only New York Times bestseller, and made Harry famous, or more famous than he had been. And he was also a tremendous promoter of his book. But it was such a beautifully written book. I still think his description of inflation and what the Federal Reserve does and basic monetary economics is the clearest, best, short layman's writing on the subject I've ever seen. I mean, Harry's a very, very talented guy, and I was his editor and when the book was published, and I've known him ever since then and admired him and admired people who run for office, with the exception of Ron Paul. But Harry Brown's an exception, too. He, I think the world of him.
He was a special candidate. I was able to be his press secretary in 2000. And, you know, you see the guy, I'm not trying to cut on anybody here, but the guys before and since, and he just, is kind of head and shoulders above them. He just really has that ability to communicate. And I've learned so much from him, and I'm privileged to be able to sit here in his seat tonight. 1-800-259-9231 if you want to get on the show, or you can email us at comments@downsizeddc.org. I want to ask a question about the courts and the 14th Amendment. I got a question here about Social Security. I got a question here about Murray Rothbard. I don't know if we're going to get to any of that stuff, but I got to ask about...
Well, ask away, sure.
I got to ask about regime libertarians. Your site's very much in the... this article, The Regime Libertarian, struck me as being very much in the old Murray Rothbard tradition. This was about the Libertarian Party's exit strategy from Iraq. What did you think of the LP's exit strategy?
Well, I don't want to think about only the LP, but I think there are people who, let's just say, if your main goal in life is to persuade the government of a different course, then of course you can't ever say anything that's going to really bug the government. You've got to just be, very careful, very incremental, and just, and in fact, this would be a subject of a whole other show. I don't think it's any coincidence that libertarians who set out to do that end up actually advocating bigger government, whether through so-called Social Security privatization, whether through school vouchers, or whether through this terrible so-called exit plan of the Libertarian Party, which was advocating massive foreign aid for Iraq and keeping all the troops over there, just getting them out very, very gradually out of Iraq itself, but keeping them there on the borders, I guess, ready to kill and bomb again if they didn't do the will of Uncle Sam. But just, how naive get... Foreign aid is an act of imperialism. It's not a charitable act. The government, this massive conglomeration of people we can think of as a band of thieves writ large, they do not engage in charity. When they give so-called foreign aid, first of all, it benefits big corporations friendly to the government here at home, but it's used to extend the power of the U.S. government in, let's say, a post-war Iraq. So anyway, the whole exit plan was something that pretended to be a more moderate anti-war thing and actually turned out to be worse. I mean, worse than some of the Republican stuff. So I thought it, again, people can take a look at the article if they want to just put regime libertarian, or you can just put in Google, and it'll take you right to that article.
Now, we have a question from that came in on the comments at downsizedc.org email here. Alan in California writes, most people believe that national defense is too overwhelming a task for the free market and that only a state is capable of providing it. What are some free market alternatives for national defense?
Well, you know, there's a very wonderful book edited by Hans Hermann Hoppe on national defense and the market. But, you know, has anybody ever been in the Army listening to hear? I mean, the government, the idea that the state can provide this most important service and do it well, it's true that the late Peter Drucker, said the government could only do two things well, make war and steal our money through taxation. But, you know, so they're, I guess they have an ability to kill people en masse, but is that national defense? I don't think so. And I think that even if we're going to have a government defense in the Senate, you know, we have to go back to see what the Founding Fathers said. We don't want standing armies for the federal government. That's very, very dangerous. And as Madison said, brings about this the worst threat to liberty is government militaries. So, you know, we could look at the way Switzerland does it. We could look at the way America used to do it with militias, state militias. So there are all kinds of alternatives. But the present system is the worst threat to liberty in our country. I mean, it's being used right now to attack our liberties in a whole host of ways. And rather than protecting us, you know, I think we have a very tough thing for Americans to think about this, that our worst enemy is not, you know, some bird in a cave in Pakistan. The organization that is taking half our money, that wants to run our lives, wants to raise our children, wants to run our families, our businesses, tell us how to live in our neighborhoods, wants to run every aspect of our lives, know every dime that you have and what you do with it, control everything you do, is in Washington, D.C. That's where the real threat is. So the idea that you want to give them power to have these massive armies and fleets and atomic bombs and seems to me that's inconsistent with liberty. The great French libertarian, Belgian libertarian, Gustave de Molinari, first to write about this in more than 130 years ago. Murray Rothbard wrote about it. Hoppe, with the free market can do everything else, why can't it do this? So I think that the idea that the government has to provide this, it doesn't work, and in fact, it doesn't provide it. Look at American wars. Virtually every American war involves, you know, attacking somebody else. It doesn't involve defending us.
Right.
So it's just a fraud. For murder and for theft.
We got about 25 seconds here in this segment. Social Security reform. Your site has definitely spoken out on this issue as well. What's your position on Social Security reform?
Well, and for anything that lessens it, anything that would cut taxes, anything that would allow people to opt out, anything that would shrink the terrible carbuncle of Social Security in our society, which is economically very damaging. But the idea that we should have massive, you know, forced savings programs to allow the government to own stocks, allegedly for our benefit, you know, this makes things much, much worse. So we don't want what Bush was advocating, so-called Social Security privatization, which would make things worse. We want to look at things that would cut back, allow people, let's say, to say, you know what, I agree to get no Social Security payments in return for not paying any more taxes. Some of this was done under Margaret Thatcher in Britain. It can be done. We need to cut Social Security, cut its reach, cut its power, not expand it in the name of libertarian rhetoric.
Lou, can I ask you to stand for one more segment?
Sure.
Okay. 1-800-259-9231. Last chance. Or comments at downsizedc.org.
In the 1960s, the politicians promised us that war on poverty would end hardship and suffering.
Instead, countless Americans now live trapped in despair. Billions of our tax dollars have been spent, and after 40 long years, the war remains to be won.
In the 1970s, the politicians promised us the war on drugs would reduce drug abuse and crime.
Instead, we've witnessed an increase in drug abuse, rising crime rates, and growing prison populations.
Most recently, the politicians promised us the war on illiteracy would improve our educational system.
Instead, our children's reading scores are plummeting. many high school graduates struggle with the most basic English. And many politicians refuse to send their sons and daughters to the same schools they expect our children to attend.
Politicians rarely deliver what they promise. Usually, they deliver the opposite. Learn how you can make a difference. Visit DownsizeDC.com. That's DownsizeDC.com.
It's up to us.
You're listening to The Harry Brown Show on the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
What wonderfully emotive music to bring us back in for another segment of the Harry Brown Show. This is Jim Babka sitting in for Harry Brown on this holiday weekend. 1-800-259-9231. My guest tonight has been Lou Rockwell with LouRockwell.com. This final segment we're going to have with him, and I'm going to have to make some choices here, Lou. I've got four or five more questions I want to ask you, but I know we're going to have to limit it here.
Well, I'll try to keep my answer short.
Okay. No, that's great. I mean, these, you are obviously well-read and understand a diverse number of subjects, and I'm just kind of amazed. One of the questions I wanted to ask you had to do with where you got your writers from. I mean, you have a large wealth of writers. I'm particularly these days fond of Butler Schaefer. Every time he writes something, I'm sure to click on it and read it. Where do you get these guys from?
Well, I guess I could say it comes from the spontaneous order. I mean, some of them I've asked to write. Others have written me and asked to write. Butler Schaefer, of course, has been an extraordinary libertarian intellectual and advocate of freedom for many years before LouRockwell.com. He's a professor of law at Southwestern Law School in Los Angeles, author of a number of very important books, and I just think he's an extraordinary guy, very, very smart, very effective, and I'd urge everybody to click on his name when they see it.
Yeah, I don't miss a column by him. There's a lot of columns every day, folks. You get a good dose of it. There's about, 8, 10, and sometimes a little bit more, right, Lou,
there are 12 articles every day.
Okay.
Most of them originals and a few links. It can vary, but that's the general.
So there's a good steady diet of good material there. You don't have to read the propaganda of the state. You can get some a different insight on the world there. And Butler Schaefer is absolutely wonderful. He kind of gives a philosophical or even a spiritual, without being religious, type of perspective on the damage that the government does to individuals, on their spirit, on their wills, and their abilities. Things that kind of are hard to quantify in typical economics models, but the insights that he offers are just absolutely wonderful. Murray Rothbard. There's a lot of stuff that people could read from Murray Rothbard. He's a very prolific writer, but you knew him. He was a friend of yours. What would you want people to know about Murray Rothbard? What's one good Murray Rothbard story?
Well, as you could tell from his archives, which we are very lucky to have at the Mises Institute, from the time he was in grammar school, he was recognizably Murray Rothbard. And when you read his papers as a child, that passion for liberty and that searing intellect and that ability to look clear-eyed through the fog of government and maybe things that parents or others are teaching us, or in his case, his dad was a great libertarian, so not in his case, but teachers in schools or whatever, and to see through to the truth. I mean, his entire life was spent in the cause of liberty, but with huge joy. I mean, this was a man whose presence you couldn't be in for more than 2 or 3 minutes before you're laughing uproariously. I mean, he was so funny and so productive, many, many books, thousands of articles. If you look on Mises.org, or I have it on LouRockwell.com too, his annotated bibliography, which we still don't think is quite finished. We think there's still some things out there we don't have on it. But he's just wrote a huge amount, plus he was teaching, plus he had many, many hobbies, a great circle of friends, and a salon in his apartment in New York of libertarian intellectuals. He was really the creator of the modern libertarian movement and of libertarianism as a set of ideas. Really, he is the man who took Austrian economics, individualist anarchism of the 19th century, natural rights theory, Thomism, Aristotelianism, and combined them all into such a powerful package that you can't If you read just a little bit of Rothbard, you never really see anything else the same again. You see through what the government is doing. You see through what the media is doing. I can't advocate too strongly that people take a look at his writing, whether it's his journalistic writing, his very, very serious economic writing, because he was a very important Austrian economist, Mises' most important student, a very important political philosopher, a very important libertarian activist. Just what an extraordinary man he was. But if I would leave, you know, besides this, who knows what his IQ was? I don't know, 250 or something. But besides that, just a great guy, very, very funny, not an arrogant bone in his body, somebody you'd love to have a drink with, as well as be in his class.
And he would have really dug the internet, wouldn't he?
Oh, he would really. He was not exactly Mr. High Tech, but he would have loved the internet, and I would say he's a bigger figure today in the world of ideas than he's ever been, and that's because of the internet. So you can all of a sudden read what he wrote, and we have all the various articles. We're putting them up as many as we can on the website, many of his books on the website, and author of the great treatise, Man, Economy, and State, 1,000-page economic treatise, and many great short journalistic articles, some of which I collected in a book, and everything in between. I mean, he was, you know, how did he do it? Very, very hard work, total dedication to the cause. When you look through his letters, and what an extraordinary experience it is to look through these letters. Someday we're going to collect them into maybe 12 or 14 volumes of these letters. So interesting, so apt, so sharp. So you learn so much from them about not only the current state of affairs then, but the future, and about how to look at things. So all that, but combined with what a joy. I mean, he once wrote a wonderful article about H.L. Mencken, and he dubbed him the joyous libertarian. Well, that was certainly Murray Rothbard. He was just what a guy.
Lou, final question. At DownsizeDC.org, my organization, we are requesting something novel. We are advancing the idea that there ought to be a law passed called the Read the Bills Act that actually requires Congress to read the laws it passes, which we believe would slow down the speed at which they're working in Washington, D.C. Is it too much to ask Congress to read the laws before they pass them?
Well, it's not, but of course it's actually impossible in the present context, because they passed thousands and thousands of pages of laws. So that, you know, Ron Paul famously talks about the Patriot Act, which was this huge multi-hundred-page bill, very complex, delivered to them an hour before they were supposed to vote on it.
Yes, this kind of stuff goes on routinely.
Nobody could know what was in there, right? And this is all intentional. So, no, they don't read anything. No congressman reads any bill. And Ron Paul has the very correct view that if you're not 100% sure of what's in there, you're going to vote no. So that's the way they should all be. And I think it's a great rhetorical thing, but, you know, I imagine they read the bills in the first Congress, and maybe they read the bills under Jefferson or whatever, but as government, you make a great point, because as government gets bigger and bigger, it's a bunch of staffers and outside special interests and people in the permanent bureaucrats in the executive branch who are actually writing these bills, reading them, who know what's in there. But no, the typical congressman doesn't know. He doesn't know anything.
Well, Lou, thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Harry Brown Show. I know Harry will be pleased to hear this as well.
Well, Harry's a great man, and it's an honor to be on his show, Jim, and great to be with you, too.
Thank you very much. Have a great evening. Folks, we'll be back with more information, 1-800-259-9231, if you want to get in before the show's over.
Here it is, folks, the 2006 Red Book, the most comprehensive edition ever published. Midas Resources believes our clients should be as informed as possible. It includes the history of U.S. coins, the actual mintages, the grading standards. Learn the stability of real money. Protect yourself from fiat currencies. They are instruments of debt. Feel the comfort and safety of real money. Midas will send you the 2006 Red Book and a genuine silver dollar for just $22.95 delivered. Call Midas today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237. Don't be lost in a sea of confusion. Get the 2006 Red Book. Help steer your own financial ship. Call Midas now, 1-800-686-2237.
The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Harry Brown Show. I am Jim Babka, sitting in for Harry Brown. I am the president of the Downsize DC Foundation and DownsizeDC.org, and I have my own show here on the Genesis Communications Network that airs Sunday afternoons at 4 o'clock tomorrow. My guest will be Ed Brayton, who writes the blog Dispatches from the Culture Wars, and we'll be talking about evolution and intelligent design. We have some unique takes to offer on that, and it'll be a very interesting discussion. I was really thrilled to have Lou Rockwell on the show tonight to be able to talk to him. I've never spoken to Lou before. I've emailed with him scores of times, shared ideas with him, and I read his page on a regular basis. I cannot recommend highly enough LouRockwell.com. It is probably the biggest deal on the web in the libertarian movement at this point in time, and it it provides an education. It provides a staple. You know, as you're going through your day and you're encountering the bias of the media, and you see, and the bias, as he pointed out correctly, is a bias that's pro-state. It's a bias that is designed to make you think that government programs are the solution to every problem imaginable. And constantly there is a bias on the media's part. They're constantly looking for ways to expand the government, it seems. When the war was being sold to the American people, when an attack on Iraq was the approach that was being offered by the Bush administration, there were very few dissenting voices because they were giddy with excitement with the opportunity to have embedded reporters. They follow the president around every day. They follow various cabinet leaders around all day. They follow the congressional leaders around all day. And they report on what these people do and as if this is all life is about. And you have to have an antidote to that. You have to be able to build up your immunity and be able to think straight. And the people that write, by and large, for LouRockwell.com, write, by and large, articles that will help you think correctly. They will give you, if you are not maybe a libertarian yet, they will give you an insight that you wouldn't have had before. They will ask you a question. And these questions, you know, are based on powerful ideas that once they get in your head, they kind of begin to clang around a little bit and they begin to change some things around. They begin to make you see things differently, see the whole world differently, see the claims of the administration and other people in government in a very different way. And, you know, I mentioned Butler Schaefer, but there's all kinds of guys that are writing for this page. James Ostrowski, Joe Sobran, Charlie Reese, Lou Rockwell himself is writing some great stuff, Stephen Carson. There's just, you know, so many different people writing for this page right now. James Wilson, another one of my favorite writers over there, James Leroy Wilson. You know, there's some really good material that's being put up at the LouRockwell.com page, and you have an opportunity, Jim Cox. I mean, it just goes on and on. Harry Brown. You can go and read these columns and get insight on what's going on in the current news. And then the Mises Institute, you know, we didn't really get a chance to do this justice. And, you know, anytime you're in an interview like this, you always wish you had more time to talk and you could elaborate more. And as you could tell, Lou has a breadth of experience and ideas and concepts in a lot of different areas. And he was able to very easily share those ideas. They just came out of him. But the Mises.org, you know, Lou's not involved in just one valuable thing, but he's doing two valuable things. And Mises is basically training the economics department leaders of tomorrow. And so I encourage you to check out Mises.org. I have to be honest with you. I have a little bit more hard time with this page because I really wasn't well educated when it comes to economics, and I'm learning more all the time. And as I begin to understand things, I'm getting better and better at it. But this is a page that is really targeted at people who take economics and the study of economics as an art or a science very seriously, and it's waging, it's participating in the war of ideas. It's also, as I said, equipping this next generation. Lou talked about the students who come in the summertime to participate in their courses. It's an opportunity for them to be prepared and equipped and basically to begin placing free market thinkers in academia all across the country. Both of these functions that he's engaged in, LouRockwell.com, and you can visit Mises, M-I-S-E-S.org, are doing a very valuable service for our country, and I encourage you to check them both out. Well, I was glad that Lou had some positive things to say about the Read the Bill Act. Read the Bills Act is beginning to pick up steam. We're going to be giving some more good news about the Read the Bills Act this week at DownsizeDC.org. You can go to DownsizeDC.org. The great thing about our system is that we are actually activating people, and we're changing the dynamics. You know, government programs grow because a very small handful of people benefit from the growth of that, and they work hard to get that growth. But the costs are dispersed over a wide, wide array of people. And so people aren't going to go march on Washington to save a nickel, a dime, a quarter, or a dollar. You know, they're not going to do that. But we've been able to turn that around. We've been able to focus on a very small amount of people, Congress, 535, that cannot close their portals. And we've given a unique lobbying mechanism. We call it the electronic lobbyist system, where you can come to DownsizeDC.org. You can fill in your information, and it will tell you who your representative and two senators are, and allow you to send a custom message to all of them on various issues. We've taken on the Patriot Act. We've taken on some of Ron Paul's bills. We've backed a whole bunch of different things. If you go to DownsizeDC.org, you can see those campaigns. And the Read the Bills Act is a center campaign. And we have just now, just this past week, started a brand new blog. We got a blog button on the left-hand side of the screen, and we're telling good news because we just couldn't contain all the good news, frankly, in our Downsizer Dispatch email messages. And, in fact, I'll share one item of those when we get back, and we'll also have a quick item about the Patriot Act when we come back. Final segment of the Harry Brown Show. Don't go away. A congressman recently revealed that legislation totaling 2,900 pages and involving more than $1 trillion was available to members of Congress for less than 48 hours to study and consider. That's over 60 pages of legislation per hour. Do you think anyone read the entire bill? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Consider a proposal buried in a 3,200-page, $388 billion bill, which would have empowered committee chairmen or their agents to examine Americans' tax returns. When this horrible provision came to light, no one claimed to know how it got into the bill. One congressman questioned said, "I didn't write it. I didn't approve it. I wasn't even consulted." If your attorney represented you this way, he might be disbarred. But this is how Congress represents you every day. That's why DownsizeDC.org has created the Read the Bills Act. You can force Congress to read their bills before they pass them at DownsizeDC.org.
The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Well, this is the final segment of the Harry Brown Show. And I want to get two more things in quickly, so let's get right to it. First of all, as I was saying before the break, we have a new blog at DownsizeDC.org, and I encourage you to check it out. We'll be updating this on a regular basis. My favorite posting, though, from this past week is asked the question, is imitation the most sincere form of flattery? You know, the Cato Institute is the big boy in the libertarian movement financially. And institutionally, they have a very large, about a $17 million budget, and they employ about 150 people, mainly policy experts. And they're quoted around town, and they're seen in the media. And they have picked up on the downsizing idea. They have released a new book called Downsizing Government by Chris Edwards, based on a study that he did last year called Downsizing the Federal Government. And it was introduced by a symposium, called Downsizing Government. Now, even though they're using the downsizing line, Very similar to Downsize DC, you know. They have not sent me a copy of the book. I'd love to see a copy of this book. And so if anybody, you know, has any friends at Cato and could get them to pop a copy of this book over to me, that would be great. But I am just thrilled to death that they're picking up on this. I think the downsizing idea is going to take everybody by storm. We do need to downsize DC. I'm glad the show's coming near an end here because my voice is really wearing out. But I want to get one more thing in, and that is there was a tentative deal on the Patriot Act extension, and it had some new provisions in it. They were extending provisions that were set to sunset in a few years, as well as provisions that were going to sunset here in December. And that deal fell apart right before the Thanksgiving break. They were not able to get it done, and you can bet your bottom dollar they're going to do whatever they can to get this done because some of the provisions of the Patriot Act do sunset and expire in December. So Congress is going to be doing all they can. Now, the Democrats smell blood in the water. They see the president's low poll numbers and his lack of popularity, his poor handling on a variety of issues, and so they are doing everything they can as coming into this 2006 election year, believing in their heart of hearts that they actually have a chance to take over the House. And so they may be willing to fight. We're hoping that gridlock becomes the rule of the day on the Patriot Act. And you can go to downsizedc.org. The Patriot Act campaign is right there on the homepage. Just scroll down a little ways and tell Congress that you want gridlock. You don't want a vote on the Patriot Act. You want to let these provisions expire and go away. And you have the opportunity to do that. This is something that we could potentially win. Now, I think the Democrats are going to capitulate at the last minute. That's what I fully expect. But we've got to give this a try. There really does seem to be a chance in this case. Again, that's downsizedc.org. Well, I'm thankful to Harry Brown that he has confidence in me that he would ask me to fill in for him on this holiday weekend. And I'm wishing him the best tonight. And I'm grateful for Lou Rockwell for being on this show. And I'm especially grateful to you for listening. Now, I'll be back on again tomorrow afternoon on the GCN Network. Go to GCNlive.com, and you can hear the Culture Repair Show. My guest will be Ed Brayton. We'll be talking about evolution and intelligent design. That's 4 p.m. Central. I'll be looking for you there. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great holiday weekend.